Who are we having for dinner? The U.S. government loves passing referendums honoring people or naming buildings or parts of buildings after influential people. It's safe, and it always makes a great photo opportunity. So when a new staff canteen was built in 1977, it gave the U.S. Department of Agriculture the opportunity to commemorate someone of their choice. They chose to honor a famous 19th century Colorado pioneer, Alfred Packer, as opposed to Alfred, Alfred. The grand opening ceremony was spectacular, and there was an excited buzz in the air as dignitaries and the press listened when the Agricultural Secretary Robert Berglund proudly announced the opening of the Alfred Packard Memorial Dining Facility. Alfred Packard, he said, exemplifies the spirit of fare that this Agricultural Department cafeteria will provide. Several months later, without any fanfare, the cafeteria was renamed. It was brought to the attention of the USDA. The reason Alfred Packard was famous, or infamous, was because he was accused of and tried for murdering and eating 5 prospectors in 1874. Welcome to the cafeteria. In a class by itself, in 1917, at the height of World War I, the Germans declared unrestricted submarine warfare, the sinking of merchant ships without warning, and an attempt to cut off trade and supplies to Britain. The British Admiralty decided to produce their answer to the German U-boats, a fleet of 325-foot-long steam-powered submarines called K-class submarines, which were soon nicknamed Calamity Class. Here's why. K-1 collided with K-4 off the Danish coast on November 18th, 1917, and was purposely sunk to avoid capture. K-2 caught fire on her maiden ride. K-3 sank for no apparent reason with the Prince of Wales on board, and then mysteriously resurfaced again. K-5 was lost due to unknown reasons during a mock battle in the Bay of Biscay in January of 1921. She signaled she was going to dive and was never heard from again. K-13 sank on January 19th, 1917 during sea trials when an intake failed to close while submerging and her engine room flooded. She was eventually salvaged and recommissioned as K-22. 2 K-class boats were lost in an incident known as the, air quote, Battle of May Island. On January 31st, 1918, the cruiser HMS Fearless collided with the K-17 lead submarine, which sank in 8 minutes. In an attempt to get out of the cruiser's way, K-4 was struck by K-6, which nearly cut her in half, and then was struck by K-7 before she finally sank with all hands aboard. At the same time, K-22, the recommissioned K-13, and K-14 collided. They did manage to survive. In a little over an hour and 15 minutes, they had lost 2 subs, badly damaged 3, and 105 crew members perished. Only 1 K-class boat ever managed to engage an enemy vessel, hitting a German U-boat with a torpedo that failed to detonate. In 1918, after the accidental deaths of some 250 British sailors, the K-class project was abandoned. Ooh, come fly with me. In the early 1950s, at the height of the Cold War, the Pentagon was an open wallet when it came to defense contractors and newly devised weapons of war. It seemed like all the cool weapons had already been made. So how about a supersonic jet fighter on skis? Enter the Convair F2Y Sea Dart. The jet was devised with a set of retractable skis so it could take off and land without the use of an aircraft carrier. How successful was it? Only 5 prototypes were made, only 3 were flown, only 2 made it back. The first demonstration on April 9th, 1953 was called off because the skis caused the plane to shake too violently. For the second demonstration, the plane was fitted with new skis and new engines, and it disintegrated in midair in front of Navy officials and the press. The Pentagon was embarrassed, not because the plane was a failure or because the test pilot died, because they had already ordered and paid for 12 additional Foxtrot 2 Yankee Sea Darts. 2 kings, 3 queens, and a big joker. In 1939, during a trip across Canada, King George VI and his wife, Queen Elizabeth, were greeted by Canadian Prime Minister Mackenzie King. the mayor of Winnipeg and his wife, Mr. and Mrs. John Queen, also greeted them. So in a bizarre but factual version of Abbott and Costello's famous Who's On First, here's a partial transcript from the Canadian Broadcast Company's announcement of the event. There's the king. He's stepping out, followed by Her Majesty, Queen Elizabeth, Natalie attired in a silver coat. Mr. King is now shaking hands with the king and introducing Mr. Queen to the king and queen, and then Mrs. Queen to the queen and king. They are now proceeding up the steps to the well-decorated city hall, and the king and Mr. King together, and the queen being escorted by Mrs. Queen. The king leaves Mr. King to go to Mrs. Queen, and the queen and Mr. King follow behind, and I'm getting dizzy. A sticky situation. There have been many revolutionary weapons that changed the face of warfare forever. The longbow, the cannon, the Gatling gun, the atom bomb, and so on. There have been weapons that were revolutionary only in their level of stupidity. Case in point, hand grenade number 74. Experts during World War II were confronted with the problem of strategically using hand grenades against tanks. A metal hand grenade hitting a metal tank usually bounces harmlessly off before exploding. Hand grenade 74 was the answer, its designers bragged. It was coated with a tacky substance that would stick to the tank. Problem solved. There was, however, one minor problem using a sticky hand grenade, and that was its tendency to stick to the person throwing it before it stuck to the tank. With only 5 seconds before detonation, it goes to say that there were not a whole lot of reorders for hand grenade number 74. The incredible, regrettable egg. The citizens of Basel, Switzerland were stunned when a rooster was accused of laying an egg. In 1473, it was common knowledge that an egg laid by a rooster was prized by sorcerers, and it was known that, according to the court records, Satan employed witches to hatch such eggs, from which proceeded winged serpents most dangerous to mankind. It looked like the rooster's goose was cooked, but even something as foul as a demonic rooster deserves the best defense available, and the court appointed it a lawyer. The lawyer strutted his stuff and contended that no injury to man or beast had resulted, and that laying an egg is an involuntary act. So, he surmised, the cock should walk. The judge was impressed with the lawyer's impassioned plea, but nonetheless found the rooster guilty of sorcery, and both the rooster and the egg, whichever came first, were roasted at the stake. No mention if coleslaw and mashed potatoes were served. The sheep were rammed. I've been on GWA too long. Nearly 6,000 sheep were drowned when a freighter arriving in the Kuwaiti harbor in 1964 capsized and sank. Authorities knew they needed to remove the carcasses immediately before the sheep started decomposing and polluting the water. The only way to get the sheep out was to raise the freighter, which was no small task. Engineers failed to devise a way to raise the tanker in the short amount of time they had before the harbor became polluted. Danish engineer Carl Krøyer was noodling over the problem when he remembered a 1949 Donald Duck comic book, The Sunken Yacht, in which Donald and his nephews, Huey, Dewey, and Louie, raised the sunken ship by filling it with table tennis balls. Krøyer thought it was worth a try, and soon the sunken trader was filled with 27 million polystyrene balls. And it worked. Another idea was to flood the harbor with woolite, but everyone thought that was bad. Oh my god, that's horrible. Dead on target. In 1943, Great Britain was crafting a plan to invade Sicily, but needed the Germans and Italians to think that they were invading elsewhere. They needed a spy, but he had to be a stiff. And I don't mean uptight, I mean an honest-to-God dead person. They gave the dead man a new name, Major William Martin, some fictitious history, English currency, love letters, and a cryptic letter outlining an imminent invasion of either Sardinia on the right side of Italy or Greece on the left. The body was tossed from a British submarine off the coast in Spain, where it washed ashore. The Germans believed the information was correct and removed troops from the coasts of Italy and Sardinia. That night, thousands of British troops parachuted into the relatively unguarded island of Sicily. They are credited with being the crucial first line of soldiers that ultimately made D-Day invasion possible. A dead fictitious man played a key role in one of the most decisive battles of World War II. I cannot believe he said esprit de corps. Getting down to brass tacks. At the same time, explorer Samuel Wallace discovered the Tahitian Islands in June 1767, his crewmen discovered the native women would trade sex for iron nails. The Tahitians found many uses for iron nails, and soon they became more precious than silver or gold. Soon a precarious condition evolved. On the one hand, you had a beautiful exotic woman willing to do anything for iron nails, and on the other hand, you had lonely, bored sailors with nothing to do but figure out how to get their hands on iron nails. Thereby, at the heart of the dilemma was the HMS Dolphin, a wooden ship being held together by iron nails. Captain Wallace was forced to forbid the trade. It was soon found that all the belaying cleats had been ripped off, wrote the captain in his log, and that there was scarcely one of the hammock nails left. The nail crisis came to a head at Mr. Pinckney's robust transactions led to the collapse of the mainsail. I'm not sure about this, but it's possible that this is where nailing or getting nailed became synonymous with sex.